Welcome to the Spaceworks podcast, brought to you by Comfort Petitioning. In this first series, we will be focusing on adaptable workspaces and how we can better design and challenge boundaries to benefit the user and business needs. My name is Axa Rafiq. I'm a specification executive at Comfort Petitioning. This series is led by Andrew Parkin, Global Head of Acoustics at Kundal, and joining me in this discussion is Anarita Martins, Sustainability Lead at Woodall's Design, and we have Dominic Duggan, Creative Director at Octra. In episode 2 of our 3-part series, we'll explore factors that influence adaptable design and their implications.
What has the COVID pandemic done for workplace design and adaptable design? And I'll ask that to you, Dom.
A really positive thing to say about adaptable design is that it's actually what I call intelligent design. It's actually a space that isn't just kind of fit for one function. Let's say, if you think of things in the most physical, kind of obvious sort of way. And I think, you know, the idea of a workplace having multiple sort of uses, but in essence, providing choice. And I think too many people think of environments needing to rigidly present options. I don't think is just the key. It's about an environment that basically supports agility. It supports a hybrid way of working. And in fairness, it's not because of COVID, obviously. We all know that. We've just basically fast-forwarded almost, I don't know, 8 years or something like that. And that was fast-forwarded because of technology. But in fairness, so many people were like sort of stuck in their ways. And it's only now that we're actually seeing businesses actually focusing on this subject in terms of really optimization, how they get the best out of their workplaces. And then when they do move, they then say, well, actually, do I need all that space? And it's the simple sort of questions like that that have been thrown at us. So I think that the subjects which naturally are spin-offs of the benefits of creating quite creative solutions, and I don't mean design solutions, I mean being creative with people's time in terms of traveling at different points of the day, because actually they are having time to take their children to school and they're coming in for the key meetings, but they're being more creative with their use of their time. I think all has benefits from a well-being perspective. I think it's taken pressure off the infrastructure of particularly London in terms of, you know, from a sustainability perspective and traffic and all that sort of rubbish, that I actually think there's been lots of sort of benefits there. But actually, I'm a big fan of making people move. So, for example, if you're in a tech environment pre-COVID, if you look at a typical day in the life of a cross-functional sort of scrum team, whatever you want to call it, which generally is a 10-person team, questions like, do I need a height-adjustable desk, are kind of irrelevant, because they're not stuck at desks like traders are. They're actually moving around. And some of my favourite projects are actually working with technology companies where they actually need really, really, really adaptable spaces, which aren't physically adaptive. They just provide lots and lots of choice that they use, and they use those functions in so many, so many different ways. And they're really interesting briefs. And so I think that for me, COVID has been incredible. But one final thing I will say on that is that is a disappointment. And I was asked this question at the Workspace show when I was speaking back in, I don't know, 3 months ago, was that I do have a disappointment, right? And it's a little thing, a little bone I've got to pick with not my clients, but some potential clients that we could have had as well. I think that people are still lacking bravery with this opportunity. And I'm a bit worried that I'm not saying everyone's going to go back to the trad world or trad way of working, so to speak. But I do think that this is a great opportunity to sort of grab while people are still in sort of limbo, if you like, between the home, and they're spending more time at home than they are in the workplace. And I think as part of that encouragement, it's a real great chance to have some real key projects that are setting the new benchmark. And so I personally am really excited by the briefs. I'm not that impressed by the results right now. I'm really looking forward to some decent results.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you're right, there are still some clients who have this impression that everything will go back to the way that it always was, which I don't believe will be the case. And I think time will tell as their staff leave them and go to more forward-thinking and agile companies, that will then work itself out in the end. AXA, what are your thoughts on the impact that COVID has had on the workspace? I mean, coming from a background where your livelihood relies on people building offices and inhabiting offices and putting screens and partitions in there, how has the home working hybrid model impacted on you?
I think ultimately the demand for the type of products has changed. It's changed massively because, as Dom said earlier, it's COVID has pushed innovation. What it's done is just sped up what we'll generally do or innovate in the next 3 to 5 years into the space of 2 years. And I think it's absolutely fantastic because, if anything, it's changed the workspace for the better, because it's not only pushed designers, architects and employers to rethink their strategy in terms of the way they're designing their workspaces and how they can utilize the workspace. I mean, in the past, what would happen is you would walk into an office and they say, okay, we need some bog standard glass partitioning and whatnot. And you've got white walls and very, very basic office spaces where you sort of, it looks like everything else. Whereas now, more and more, what we're seeing is companies are adapting their office spaces to encourage and sort of lure their employees back in from home. Because ultimately, what we've got to think about is that as COVID has progressed, we've been working from home, and ultimately your home is a place that you have personally designed. It's somewhere that you love to be, it's somewhere that you love to look around at, and you sort of gain all the experiences and sensations and feelings and thoughts in those spaces as you would ultimately want to. When you leave that space and you're traveling to an office, really what people are looking for is to feel the same way. They want to wake up in the morning and say, oh, do you know what? I can't wait to be in the office. And as a business at Comfort, we've looked into this and do a bit of market research. And what we found is elements such as, rather than having your standard plasterboard walls and glazed partitioning, people are asking for different finishes now. They're asking for buy block systems where they can adapt the spaces. They're asking for pods, which are fully movable and adaptable again, and they can again be adjusted. So you can have tables in there, you can have chairs in it, or you can have it just as an open communal space for people to collaborate and effectively invest their work time in. I think it's really pushed agile spacing. And yeah, I think COVID is definitely a blessing in a weird way to the design industry, because it has pushed us to think further and ultimately get a higher return of investment out of their employees whilst ensuring that their well-being is taken care of and they're happy in those spaces.
Anarita, coming to you on that, based on what we've just been discussing about the impact that COVID has had on the workspace and this draw or drive to get people back into some kind of more formalised working environment in a workspace, how are you as designers and providers of workspace solutions, how are you creating a sense of home for people in an office environment?
That is, for a lot of corporations and clients that come to us, it's almost a year priority. So not only providing a support, mindful and sustainable space, but also flexible enough to really adapt to the new type of work. And this means that people will go back to work to do kind of different tasks, not only collaborate, communicate, having meetings, but then at the same time during their day, their tasks could also be focusing and really need that kind of spaces to respond to those needs. But regarding the well-being and sustainability, when I say top priority, I think I mentioned this before, obviously, because priority means that, as Dom also mentioned, if you see the triangle of priority, you have budget, time and resource. And so if the budget is within to get the most mindful and sustainable projects, and most of our clients come with net zero roadmaps, so how do we create the right framework for their real estate or project fit out that will align with their own roadmaps and net zero goals, no matter if it's 2030, 40 or 50? And they open to chats about pre-surveys, certifications, LCAs, life cycle assessments, changing or really trying to understand how they can improve their ESG policies. And I think we've been developing a lot of our work methodology to really have this higher performance on social sustainability and obviously economic performance, there will be crafting a methodology for each client. And sometimes I always say that certifications or assessments really trying to understand how you're going to assess your project along the way. It's not at the end of the project when you deliver it. But if you start that kind of assessment in terms of what's going to be the carbon footprint or how inclusive is going to be your project, it's going to be quite embedded along the way and embedded on the budget. And so I see certifications such as WELL, BREEAM, FITWELL, LEED, and now we're even exploring one called NEIBORS that looks to the operational side of the building. This creates almost like a guidance, a roadmap that when you have a tight budget or a fast timeline, it really aligns everyone in this kind of like assessing very detailed categories in buildings, such as if you can improve any biodiversity on your green terraces, or are you providing drying rooms for the cyclists? Or even to the point that you say, maybe you create a modular system of your flooring, or how do you going to be creating the best fix of this carpet tiles? So at the end of the life, they can actually be reusable and recyclable. And so I think certifications or assessments such as BREEAM or WELL, they don't make buildings or projects sustainable, but they are an amazing guidance that you could really assess and align everyone in the team to be under the same goals, or even, you know, discuss those conversations for 2 to 3 hours. We've been with a client a few months ago where we revised each credit of WELL and each credit of BREEAM and understanding what would be the impact on doing that change, even the cost impact, because for some projects, it's not easy or there's no budget for certifications. But if they see the real, truly impact of how that could be at the end of the day, and I'm not saying sometimes you could create just those principles, there's excellent guidance that you could use, LETI guidance, UKGBC framework. So almost having a parameter while you're designing, assessing what is your carbon footprint and how inclusive you are. I always say, and I advise my team, Woodles, we have under the same umbrella sustainability, design, and delivery on site. So that allows us to have a clear communication of what our goals or how systematic we want to apply our libraries with the right certifications. So almost my advice to people that really want to start to, sometimes that it's too fast, but too fast timeline. So start to ask, but ask that to suppliers, what does it mean, those certifications, but create kind of a systematic approach. If you're not doing assessments, like save your own libraries, set goals. Are your project really trying to have high recycled content in all materials? Are you trying to reduce the transport emissions, applying ESG framework? So really set strong goals across all departments and then really systemize them and apply to all projects, even when that doesn't come to the brief or you don't have as much as time to apply all of them.
You referenced the WELL building standard quite a bit, and certainly that's something that we as an organisation have been looking at for a long time, probably 7 or 8 years now. We took the decision to use that for our London office in St Paul's, and we achieved the first WELL certification in Europe for that. And it was a risk because, yes, it costs more to design to that certification scheme. But what we saw very quickly was that the extra over cost, which from memory was something like £30,000, was paid back in no time at all in terms of staff retention, ability to attract new staff, the number of sick days reduced. And so it was really a no-brainer, and therefore we've rolled it out for a number of our other offices as well. It's interesting also, we talked earlier about indoor air quality, and a lot of the drivers for that, it's all health-based, obviously. These different certification standards, they come from different backgrounds. Some are to do with energy, some are to do with the built form, some are to do with health. And it's when we've looked at some of these, and again, the WELL certification scheme, it's designed around good indoor environments. And it's quite an efficient combatant against pandemics and airborne viruses as well, because it promotes all the things that we need to minimize the risk of airborne viruses. So we have good ventilation, we have controlled relative humidity, we have good daylight, all these things, low touch points, antimicrobial touch points. So it's interesting, isn't it? The one of the other things that's come to my mind as we've been talking is that really we're treating all this adaptable spaces and agile working as something new. But it's not really, is it? Because the BCO have been going on for years about having a variety of spaces. And it's been one of the criteria of the BCO judges as they've been looking at which buildings and which fit-outs deserve awards, that having a variety of spaces which can suit the needs of their workers has been a big driver in that. So, Dom, can I turn to you and ask what your thoughts are in terms of how we're designing now, or how we are going to do in the future compared with in the past, for specifically for productivity and also neurodiversity, the two being linked, because approximately 22%, I think, of all workforce are neurodiverse in some way or another. So what are your thoughts on that, Dom?
Just to sort of break that question down in terms of the future, if you like, and it's looking, I guess, to say it's looking bright is terrible, isn't it? But to actually say that ultimately that I think that we all recognise that these types of environments are, in terms of their success to be delivered, success to be positively, you know, to be executed, to be built right, and for clients to sort of buy into them, the likelihood is on the rise, which is good and exciting. And I think the point about the products is a little bugbear of mine, only in relation to I just want them to be more intelligently simple. You know, I think, you know, we've got a lot of over-engineering that's going on, things that have been around for years and they've just changed in terms of their appearance, not necessarily become more simple. And when I say simple, I mean really user-friendly, so people can just relate to it.
On the product, so we were talking the other day about with our electrical engineers and lighting designers, and saying the best lighting control device that we have is a light switch. And sometimes we can go to the great lengths to make something really complicated, is actually just switch it off at the wall. What I wanted to ask you about, Dom, was really to do with productivity and how our diverse workforce, and especially considering significant proportion of the workforce who are neurodiverse, how can we get the most out of people in terms of their productivity, bearing in mind that they may only be spending 2 or 3 days a week in an office setting these days?
I actually developed a proposal recently for a scheme that ultimately is about choice. I know I've mentioned that word before, but choice is if you think of someone using an environment on a day-to-day basis, they have choice. Part of that choice isn't to do with just because of how someone wakes up that day and what sort of task they have, because that's how we used to look at the environment, as in activity-based. But like, for example, the proposal I looked at recently was for a gaming company. And the types of individuals that are in that environment that make up those teams, they have particular needs, they do. And they want to huddle, they want to group, they want to be isolated. And I think that, you mentioned it earlier, Andrew, that if you look at a lot of traditional kind of new builds coming out the ground, they're very kind of almost like vanilla. There's no variety in the base build, let alone what you do to it internally. Whereas if you take, for example, Herbal House, where we put photo box, they've got 4 floors, 3 of them are underground. And you might think, well, who the hell's going to work in that environment? There's a massive atrium. But actually, it's a huge tech company. And actually, that environment, from a natural light perspective, is questionable. But it's actually really, really suitable for the demographic and the nature of the individual, of the actual user groups that are actually in there. It's a huge, huge part in that. I think if you cater for the needs and recognise the neurodiverse community, then I think that naturally you'll provide an environment with so much choice that it's adaptable in its own right through choice.
Essentially what we're saying there is that it goes right down to looking at technical due diligence of when you're considering what space to take. So on one level, you've got to choose which building to take. And then once you've established a building, you've then got to choose what design to go for. And it may well be that the needs of some clientele, the needs of some workers, are really difficult to accommodate in certain types of base build. And so, yeah, it's and I think it's been interesting looking at the the market for workplace? Because some people have said, oh, well, surely now everyone's working from home, the workplace market will just die on its feet because there's no need for it anymore. But actually, we're seeing exactly the opposite. There's never been more movement in the workplace market, whether it's churn. I mean, people's leases are always going to expire. But also what I think people are now seeing is that they want something more flexible. They want something that, rather than waiting on a 10-year with a 5-year break cycle, they want to do things more quickly. They want to adapt more quickly. And that's pushing forward the market, which is incredibly exciting for those of us involved in trying to keep up with the market. A question for you, AXA. Obviously, working in the partitioning industry and looking at the less traditional forms of partitioning, so rather than using plasterboard, you might be looking at using glass or some kind of panelized system or operable wall. How can you demonstrate to clients that the value of doing that is inconsequential compared to the cost?
I think ultimately it's about being more conscious in terms of what the space is going to be used for. So, for example, if, like Dom said, if it's a technology company, obviously a lot of them, they would probably prefer to be in more sort of closed offices and spaces rather than have a completely open, well, I don't like the word open plan, but a fully open plan area. In contrast to that, you could be essentially looking at a design company where you have a mixture of both. You have people that both work both ways. You have those who would prefer to work within office spaces, meeting rooms, and sort of lock themselves away, and those that would prefer to collaborate. But then you've got the middle. Like you said, there's a lot of neurodiversity. So ultimately, as a partitioning manufacturer, we have to look at the requirements and the brief of the space where we're putting our product, or where we're recommending in terms of the products that we're recommending to architects and designers. Because it could be, for example, that we are looking at an agile space where you do have the mixture of both an open plan area for collaboration as well as the offices. Is there a way to, for example, integrate a movable wall to allow that flexibility that the open plan area can become a smaller space dependent on projects? Within our business, we did a project quite a few years ago, and we integrated a bi-block system that we do there called Comfort Create. And what it is this, the nature of this business is that they have a project team, and say every 6 to 8 months, this project team will only work on one particular project. And then once that project is completed, they'll then change teams, or they move on to the individuals move on to different projects and so on. And what that means is that the office environment and the workspace needed to constantly be adaptable. And what we did is we integrated and recommended one of our bi-block systems, and that allowed us to then go in, pull the panels off, and move it around without leaving a footprint. And again, you're not ultimately ordering new partitioning and binning the old, you're reusing, which increases the longevity, and essentially you're being more sustainable with your choices of design.
This podcast was brought to you by Comfort Partitioning. Thank you for listening to episode 2 of 3 of our Adaptable Spaces series. Join us for our final episode of the series, which looks into how designers and manufacturers can collaborate to design products fit for future workplaces. If you enjoyed the conversation today, please subscribe to our Spaceworks podcast to hear upcoming episodes and series with industry thought leaders sharing their insight into future design.